Hi, this is Michael Ostrank with the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons and Take Back Medicine. And I'm here with Dr. Richard Amerling, a nephrologist practicing in New York City. He's an associate professor of the Albert Einstein College of Medicine in New York and is the director of outpatient dialysis at the Beth Israel Medical Center. Dr. Amerling recently penned an op-ed entitled, Why Patients Need to Opt Out of Third-Party Health Insurance. First of all, welcome to the blog cast, Dr. Amerling.
Nice to be here, Michael.
Can you tell us a little bit about your op-ed and what you're encouraging people to do?
The op-ed is actually a follow-up to a piece that I wrote a couple of weeks ago urging doctors and patients to opt out. I wanted to go into more detail on why it makes sense for patients to do this as well. Now, obviously, this does not apply to everybody. Nothing does, of course. Those who are currently in Medicare are going to have trouble. Those who have chronic conditions and are being treated and they are currently under a third-party insurance system, most of those folks are probably going to have to stay where they are for the time being. My comments are addressed to what I think is the large majority of Americans who are relatively healthy and relatively young and who have the ability to put aside money to pay for their own care. For these folks, I think it makes a lot of sense to seriously consider not getting third-party insurance unless you can get a catastrophic insurance policy. The current policies that are being offered in certain states don't qualify as catastrophic. They are one-size-fits-all policies that cover everything from soup to nuts, and these policies are very expensive. If you can not get one of these policies and rather save money to spend on your own medical care, I think this is going to be in your favor in the long run.
You mentioned an earlier op-ed that you wrote. In it, you called for doctors to opt out of third-party payment systems. I think it would be helpful if you just talk briefly about that, and then I have a few questions that connect the two together.
Sure. Let's go back in time. The third-party system was not a natural occurrence. This was something that was, in effect, a government policy. It goes back to World War II when there were wage and price controls, and companies, in order to attract and retain talented individuals, offered health insurance as a benefit. This was in kind as salary because they couldn't increase salaries. They offered this as a benefit. After the war, the wage and price controls went away, but since this was tax-favored, in other words, the employer didn't pay tax and neither did the employee on the health benefits, it stayed in place, and it created a system where health insurance, for the most part, is bought or acquired through work. This is unlike any other insurance. You obviously don't buy your homeowner's insurance or your auto insurance through your employer. So this created an incentive to use that health care because it was in kind as salary. So to the extent that you were getting health care benefits, if you didn't use any of them, you were actually losing you were losing money, in effect. So this created an incentive to overuse the system, and this tax subsidy for employer-sponsored health insurance is still at the root of healthcare inflation and the third-party system that we've come to know and hate. Medicare and Medicaid grafted onto this in the 60s and created a mandate, in effect, for doctors to accept Medicare as full payment and to not charge patients or balance bill for any excess costs that they might have incurred. So the third-party system came to dominate. Private insurers and the government insurers paid the doctors directly. The doctors no longer billed patients except for smaller and smaller copays. And everybody got the impression that since nobody was really paying for anything directly, that anything goes. And therefore, if you come in with a hangnail, you go home with an MRI. That sort of thing did happen and still happens because of the third-party system. Now,
so
let me continue. The third-party system came with, eventually, controls on the way medicine is practiced. These controls were either price controls on what doctors were paid or limitations on what doctors could order, limitations on what doctors could prescribe, and also came with invasions of medical confidentiality because the third-party payers demanded to see charts of the patients to see that expenses were justified, at least according to them. So it started to make the practice of medicine less and less feasible, less and less desirable, more and more cumbersome, more and more bureaucratic, less and less time with the patient. The time with the patient is really what makes medicine work. It's the doctor-patient relationship. Anything that improves that relationship is going to improve quality of care and ultimately lower costs. All of these controls that have been added because of third-party payment have detracted heavily from the doctor-patient relationship and have also increased total spending and total costs.
So you're suggesting that doctors get out of all third-party payer schemes, and certain subset of patients who can afford to do so get out of third-party payer schemes. I think it'd be helpful to folks listening if you could give an example of each. Can you give an example of a doctor who's successfully no longer participating in a third-party payer scheme? And then when we're done with that, let's talk through how a patient actually might participate in getting his own or her own medical care without third-party payment.
Well, just there are many examples, but one that comes to mind is Jordan Schlain, who is a very innovative doctor practicing out in San Francisco, who has developed a practice that is based, that is entirely outside of a third-party system and is based on doing house calls. And he's done extraordinarily well out there. So that's one example. For patients, it's amazing to me that people think that because you don't have health insurance, you can't get medical care. In fact, the opposite is going to be true as we go forward. The patients with health insurance are going to face increasing difficulty finding doctors who accept their insurance, and the patients who are willing to pay doctors directly will have easy access to physicians and to care. There are at least 15 million, by current census data, current meaning a couple of years old already, census data of uninsured patients who are uninsured by choice. These are not poor unfortunates who simply are too poor to buy insurance. They're actually people who are working, who are making a decent amount of money, and who choose not to buy insurance because it's not a good deal for them. So these are the kind of people that I think are actually making a wise decision in many instances by not buying insurance. They can easily go to any doctor who accepts cash payments, which is just about every doctor that I know, and get seen and get taken care of. When you're talking about paying $10,000 or $15,000 a year for an insurance policy in some instances, or paying maybe $200 or $300 for an occasional office visit, or maybe up to $1,000 for some medications and a few tests, you're making a hell of a lot of money by staying out of the system. Now, obviously, if you have a catastrophic illness, you need coverage, and that's why I advocate trying to find catastrophic health insurance. If the guaranteed issue of Obamacare becomes law and survives a constitutional challenge, then you're going to be able to get catastrophic coverage at any point if you get sick. So that takes away, if you will, the incentive to buy insurance when you're healthy. Obviously, this undermines the whole concept of insurance, but then again, we're not really talking about insurance anymore. In most situations, it's prepaid medical care. If it were truly insurance, it would be relatively cheap and everybody could afford it.
That's an important distinction between real insurance versus prepaid medical care. And it's a distinction I don't think many have thought through or are aware of. Can you go into that a little bit greater detail?
Sure. Aside from minimal copays and deductibles, what most people have now is almost first dollar coverage. So as soon as you trigger your policy after maybe $100 or $200 deductible, then everything is going to be covered minus the copay. The way you go about buying health care is certainly going to be affected by these kind of incentives. You're not going to think twice about running to the doctor for every little thing. You're not going to think twice about demanding this test and demanding that test, since you're not experiencing any out-of-pocket cost when this is done. And this ultimately is what has driven costs up so dramatically and has also led to price controls and other controls on practice.
Thank you, Dr. Emmeling. This is very interesting. Can you tell us where people who are interested in reading either of one of your op-eds can find them and the title of each?
Well,
I did the title of the second one, Why Patients Need to Opt Out of Third-Party Health Insurance.
And the other one, I believe, was Opting Out of Third-Party Insurance by Doctors and Patients Will Save the Doctor-Patient Relationship.
Great.
I think it's you can access both of these on the AAPS website, aapsonline.org, and both have also been published in numerous other locations on the web, and I'm sure that Google will provide access to a lot of these. I think an important point to make is that we need to reestablish a free market in healthcare. I was just thinking about computers with the release of the iPad. In 1980, an Apple computer cost about $5,000, if memory serves. You can now get for $500 an iPad. The iPad has probably 1,000 times more power and memory and capability than the original Apple computer back in 1980, and it's for a tenth the price, and that's not even adjusted for inflation. So free market creates innovation, and it creates cost reductions. In the segments of the healthcare market that are outside of third-party payment, costs have come down. When LASIK eye surgery, which is one of the best examples, first came out, it cost a couple of $1,000s per eye to get your eyes fixed by LASIK eye surgery. You can now get both eyes fixed for about $1,500. Likewise, cosmetic surgery costs have come down. Why? Because people get into the business and they compete. They compete on quality and on price. If enough people are wise enough to see that their future lies in self-reliance as opposed to relying on governmental promises of healthcare, then we will have enough of a mass of people to create a healthcare marketplace that will drive innovation and low-cost care. A CAT scan. We can get a CAT scan for $1,000. Why is it $1,000? Well, it's $1,000 because that's what the insurance industry decides they're going to pay for it. Does it have to cost $1,000? No. If you have a free market, you're going to have people offering CT scans and competing on price and quality, and there's no reason why you couldn't get a CT scan done for $100. So this is what competition has to offer patients. If we have enough doctors who are independent, there will always be a safety net for the people who are stuck in either private or governmental third-party insurance systems. If they can't get care, the existence of a free market healthcare system running in parallel to the government-run system offers them an escape. If we don't have that, then there truly is going to be no option. When the government says, no, you cannot have this hip replacement because you're too old and you don't have enough quality life years left, well, where are you going to go? If there's no private alternative, you are truly stuck. You're going to have to live with your hip pain and take some anti-inflammatory drugs, and that will be the end of you.
Let me ask you a question, because you mentioned a safety net, and I know you meant it in a different context, but this is a question I received quite often from my progressive liberal friends. What about poor people? How can they receive quality medical care without the government, without corporate interests at play, without third-party payer schemes?
That's very simple. In a private medical system, poor people can get free care. Before Medicaid and Medicare, all doctors provided a certain amount of pro bono care, charity care. It's part of our ethic. If we are successful in our private practice of medicine, of course we're going to be providing charity care to those in need, and we'll also adjust payment based on ability to pay. So the private system is the answer, I believe, to everybody. Now, of course, currently poor people have Medicaid. Medicaid is a very inefficient, very expensive system that is bankrupting almost all states currently, and will further be bankrupting these states based on the mandates of the recent legislation, because the Medicaid rolls are going to have to increase to accept more patients. Medicaid was initially designed as a second-tier system. Why do I say that? Well, because they paid doctors a paltry amount. They paid doctors so little that no private physician could afford to see more than a handful of Medicaid patients in their practice, or they would go broke. So that created Medicaid clinics, the Medicaid emergency room visit, which, of course, drove up total costs. So by skimping on the doctor payment for Medicaid, they made it a second-tier system from the outset. Unfortunately, this is the truth. This also led to, of course, massive explosion of costs. Medicaid is extraordinarily expensive, and yet it delivers, I think, substandard care. So the private healthcare system would be a safety valve for Medicaid patients as well.
Which leads me actually to another question, and this is a question I received from lots of different people. When anyone goes to the hospital and they actually look at the charges they receive, although majority of the cost are taken up, quote-unquote, by the insurance company, so most people don't actually have to pay for anything, quote-unquote. But they actually, when people actually look at their bill, they're shocked to see the charges from Kleenex to Band-Aids to staying in the room to all the various tests. I mean, some of these things are quite extraordinary in terms of the charges for these services and goods. How do you see these goods and services, the costs, changing, if at all, if we had more of a free market?
Well, if there was truly competition and price flexibility and price transparency, prices would come down. In many markets, the insurance companies drive the reimbursement rates to the hospitals, as they do to physicians, and private insurance generally is very overcharged by the hospital, largely to make up the difference between what they get for taking care of Medicaid and Medicare patients, which they do at a loss for the most part. So for years, private insurance companies have in effect subsidized the government insurance patients, the Medicaid and Medicare patients, because they are charged more. That's been another reason why premium costs continue to rise. What would a truly transparent system do? Well, you would bargain. For example, if I got sick and I needed close care in a hospital, and if I were paying for it by myself, you know what would be the cheapest model? I would be much better off renting out a nice hotel room at the Hilton, hiring a private physician and nurse. That would cost significantly less than what a typical hospital stay would cost me. So there are ways to innovate, but we will never have them as long as we have a price-controlled system that's dominated by third-party payment.
Great. Well, this is very interesting, Dr. Emmerling. I appreciate your time. Any last comments before we complete this interview and discussion?
I just think that we have to look forward to a... unfortunately, grim future for the state of U.S. medical care if we allow it to go completely under government-run third-party system. Now is the time to take the initiative and to immunize ourselves, if you will, from this. The way we do it is by putting money aside, if possible, in health savings accounts, but if not, in any savings account, and start to save for our health care needs while we are still relatively young, healthy, and productive. The government can only promise health care. They cannot deliver health care. Only doctors, hospitals, nurses, et cetera, can do the delivery of health care. governmental schemes, we know simply by experience, never work. We know we have the examples of the UK, where the health services are in a shambles, Canada, where waiting times are inordinate and people often come to the United States for care, and we have our own examples of Medicaid and Medicare, incredibly mismanaged, both heading towards bankruptcy in the very near future, and Social Security, also now currently bankrupt. We ought to know by now that we're not going to be able to count on the government being there to fulfill the promises that they are making right now. We have to take matters into our own hands and set aside money for our future health care and retirement, for that matter. Doctors need to get out of the system so that they can stay in business and continue to provide high-quality medical care to increasing numbers of patients. Free market, while we still have it, is our best option for salvation.
And that was Dr. Richard Amerlin. He is a practicing physician in New York City. He's also a board member of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. You can learn more about the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons at aapsonline.org and at takebackmedicine.com. Thank you.